This is CBSI in the World with my colleague Gordon Chai. The missile that falls in Poland, now determined to be a Russian-made S-300 air defense missile fired by Ukraine, and therefore the emergency that it held for several hours, what happens next, Poland and NATO getting involved, is now we step back from the cliff. However, we welcome our colleague, James Fennell, Jim Fennell, government fellow at the Geneva Center for Security Policy, a retired U.S. Navy captain who served as Director of Intelligence Information for the U.S. Pacific Fleet, to comment on how he regards how NATO appears to me as an amateur on a knife's edge, that any accident could lead to Article 4, the debate, Article 5, the collective defense. Jim, a very good evening to you. You thought about this for years because serving in the U.S. Navy, at any moment, it can go from peace at hand to get ready to shoot. So when you first heard about the missile, what were your thoughts, Jim?
Well, good evening, John and Gordon. I'm a little bit biased given my background in intelligence, but when I first heard the report, obviously there was great concern that if this truly was a Russian attack that was launched into Poland, that it would launch a series of dominoes, as you've mentioned, Article 4, then Article 5, and could quite conceivably start a war between NATO, United States, and Russia. But on the positive side, if you look at it, and the strength of the United States and our NATO alliances, our intelligence collection and analysis capabilities, and we were able to, over the course of this less than 24 hours, really to ascertain where the missile came from and that it was not some kind of offensive operation from Russia. So in that light, I think the system checked itself and prevented us from escalating beyond something that would have been really catastrophic in many ways. But I think that's where China will be examining how it was that the United States examined this and what are the elements that the United States used from its intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance architecture to be able to come up with the ground truth. And China will learn from that and make sure that they can understand how to defeat that ISR architecture and use it against the United States in any potential invasion of Taiwan. And I think the other critical element of this is we're talking about Ukraine and NATO and Russia, and we don't have that similar structure in Asia. There is no NATO in Asia. So the idea that we would come up with a quick and confirmed resolution of what the source of the attack was in less than 24 hours in the Asian scenario, specifically with Taiwan, where we have limited interaction and limited military to military engagement, that could have an impact on the decision-making process. So I think Beijing's going to look at both of those facets of what it is that the U.S. and NATO use to judge intelligence, and then how do they use that in a command and control structure like NATO? And I think those are the two critical elements.
Gordon, you have a question for Jim.
Jim, China is famous for creating ambiguous looking events. So what you're saying is that because the United States doesn't have that same intelligence infrastructure with regard to Taiwan, that maybe China could do something extremely hostile, but portray it as not being hostile or using it as the first element of conflict. If you could talk a little bit more about this, because the issues you raise are absolutely fascinating in this regard.
Yeah, Gordon, I think, you know, we have, even though Ukraine's not in NATO, we have these NATO countries like Poland and Romania and Bulgaria. They've got these countries that are ring around the Ukraine, plus the regular long-standing members of NATO, with United States intelligence operatives and intelligence services and reconnaissance aircraft. And so we're embedded there so we can determine quickly the origins and the determination of who fired what and where and get a resolute answer before we start launching off. Whereas in Asia, we have a lot of intelligence capabilities. I know that because I spent my career out there. But the ability to be able to come up with quick, resolute actions when we're still in kind of a a Five Eyes only atmosphere in some sense, where it's the Five Eyes nations of the United States, Britain, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. And we don't have Japan and South Korea and Taiwan fully integrated into another kind of architecture or the Quad. That delays decision making, that delays information sharing. And so we're in a vulnerable situation. So as an American, what I would say is what I would learn from this lesson is that there needs to be a dramatic push in intelligence sharing, some kind of new intelligence sharing architecture in the Asia Indo-Pacific arena, specifically around Taiwan. We've heard talk about JAUKUS, the Japan, Australia, UK, US. We've heard about Five Eyes plus Japan. I think we need to get to some kind of real practical solution of how we can share intelligence amongst the United States, Japan, and Taiwan, and have a command and control apparatus in place, which I have recommended that we establish some kind of combined forces command in Taiwan, like we have in the Korean Peninsula, where these kinds of issues cannot spiral out of control, and we can ascertain, and as you said, cut through any kind of chicanery that Beijing would try to create by attacking something, but then making it look like it came from somewhere else, which is what we would fully expect they would do.
Jim, at G20, Indonesia, the world leadership talking about all of the issues of prosperity and where is it, given the worldwide recovery from the pandemic. There was also a remark by the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, who is notorious for making hostile remarks, referring to Taiwan as a red line that the U.S. should obey. Is that a threat at a meeting of peaceful leadership? He's meaning to threaten the United States?
John, it's very clear that from what Wang Yi said and from the official PRC readout and of the meeting between President Biden and General Secretary Xi, that China was talking in flowery language and talking about increasing and renewing the engagement policies of days gone by. But underneath all of that, there was very clearly a direct threat to the United States that if they get involved with Taiwan, that they will suffer the consequences. Now, they didn't say suffer the consequences, but it was implied that the United States would be on the receiving end of China's desire and willingness to use military force to bring Taiwan under their control. So this is, again, it's not new. It's part of the Wolf Warrior diplomacy, but it was very clear that it was part of this meeting between Xi and Biden for 3.5 hours here a couple of days ago.
And Gordon, how should we regard these hostile remarks by Wang Yi? Is this the state speaking? Is this Wolf Warrior automatic gesture? How to hear him? He's always being rude.
Yes, and I think he's being rude on the directive of Xi Jinping. Wang Yi has really been out front with this, and we see this with China's diplomats around the world taking very belligerent stances. One thing that we as Americans do is we sort of dismiss what the Chinese say, or we think, oh, they can't really have said that. But yes, when we hear these consistent messages, John, we definitely have to take note that that's how China, in fact, feels.
Yes, dictators say what they're going to do. They mean it. James Fennell is government fellow at the Geneva Center for Security Policy, retired U.S. Navy Captain Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,